Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Hello, listeners. Welcome to Mark and Sarah Talk About Songs, episode 227. No, we are not discussing the theme song from the show. Alas, I actually may have a couple mild regrets about those choices, but we're going to find out about Mark's choices in just a second. Before we do, I'm your co-host, Sarah D. Bunting, and I am here, as always, with the country with a capital C, Mark Blankenship. Hey, y'all.
Well, hey, hon. I am so glad to be here. You know, I've heard about your papaw, and I just want you to know I've been praying about him.
Thank you so much.
Okay, so if the accents haven't given it away, we are talking about a country song today. We are, in fact, talking about the song She's in Love with the Boy, the debut single by Trisha Yearwood. It was released in 91, and it shot to number one on the country charts, establishing Trisha Yearwood as a star who carries on to this day. She has her own cooking show. She's married to Garth Brooks. She and Garth Brooks are currently, as we record this, in the top 30 of the country charts with a remake of Shallow from A Star Is Born. Like, that's just, wow. I need you to
those
know that
words
exists.
In that order, just, I think I had a stroke. Anyway.
Yeah, the Trisha Yearwood, Garth Brooks, Shallow was something we didn't know we didn't need, but now we do.
It's funny because it's true.
But we do need, I think, She's in Love with the Boy. And Sarah, what I'd love to do is set up this clip, which is going to take a little bit of exposition. Then I'd love to have you talk about it for a bit, because I also have this whole other thing I need to discuss, but I don't want it to just be like 50 minutes of me uninterrupted monologuing, if that's all right with you.
That is fine.
Okay, so one of the greatest things I think about country music, one of the greatest pleasures, is the moment in a country song when a chorus that you've heard multiple times suddenly repeats but has a different meaning. The wit in that type of writing is incredibly enjoyable and seems almost exclusively reserved for country music in American popular forms. And to my mind, She's in Love with the Boy, written by a man named John Imes, I-M-S, has one of the best examples of this twist of all time in this song. So here's what happens in the first two verses of She's in Love with the Boy. Trisha Yearwood, as a third-person narrator, sings about Katie and Tommy, who are hitting all of the signifiers for country authenticity in their relationship. Mm-hmm. There's like chickens on the ground outside Katie's house. They go to a drive-in movie and then a Tasty Freeze.
I made a list.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, it is truly a checklist of things that country songs are supposed to reference so that they can be, quote, authentic. But ironically, mm-hmm. that makes them inauthentic. Anyway. But in the song, the premise is that Katie's dad, or daddy, obviously, doesn't want them to be together. And he keeps saying in the chorus that her daddy said he wasn't worth a lick. When it came to brains, he got the short end of the stick. But Katie's young, and man, she just don't care. She'd follow Tommy anywhere. She's in love with the boy. Okay, that brings us to the third verse when Katie and Tommy come creeping up the walk. They've just gotten engaged outside the Tasty Freeze. And her dad is waiting up for them, and he says, young lady, get on into your room while me and Junior have a talk, okay? So you've got this very specific scene set of Junior's about to get his ass kicked by daddy. Katie's got to go up into her room. She's in trouble. And then the following clip is what happens in the narrative immediately after daddy threatens to kick Tommy's ass.
Her dad is waiting up till 12:30 when they come sneaking up the wall. He says, young lady, get on up to your room while me and Junior have a talk. Mama breaks in, says, don't lose your temper. It wasn't very long ago. And you yourself was just a hayseed plowboy who didn't have a row to hoe. My daddy said you wasn't worth a lick. When it came to brains, you got the
So what happens clearly is that at this moment in the song, we change from a third person narrator to a first person narrator. We're inside the perspective of the mother, and she lets Daddy know that he used to be Tommy in this equation, and then she's in love with the boy. Katie looks at Tommy like, I still look at you. I'll get to that line later. She's in love with the boy, changes meaning, and I just have a lot of feelings about the arrival of the mother's perspective in this song, but I will stop for now. Sarah, tell me, what are your thoughts in relationship to this song?
I began making a list almost immediately of country with a K signifiers.
Yes.
That include not only the Tasty Freeze, the Drive-In, and Daddy, and basically a Brenda Renetti story taken off Long Island and transferred to the American South. There's also a front porch, chickens near it, reference to a one-horse town, use of the word yonder, appearance of a beat-up truck, because God forbid anybody just go down to the dealership and finance a fucking new one in country music, and there's mud on it, a-duh.
Or get a hatchback, for God's sake.
Yeah, there's also a fiddle and a git steel. Like, this is, you know, 100% tests positive for country with a K. None of that is a bad thing. It just, like, I was warned repeatedly about the country with a K aspects of it. And I was like, well, let's just see how many. Oh, yeah, here we go. Like, we weren't even to the first chorus. And I was like, holy shit. So, yeah, well done, I guess. this song is interesting, and your sort of fondness for that turn is interesting, because I think it's good. I think everything that you said about it is accurate in terms of, like, that being a hallmark of country music and for some reason dwelling almost exclusively in that genre. But for some reason, I felt a little unsatisfied. Like, I think that the idea that, like, after the song is over, you sort of realize that the mother was the narrator the whole time, probably, mm-hmm. in my opinion, which I think is, like, pretty meta deep and awesome construction-wise. But at the end of the song, it's sort of like, oh, well, you know, mom is on her team because she too was dickmatized by a teenage, I don't know, hunk of corn pone with a nose. Like, great, all better. Like, I feel like we needed, like, one more line or more harmony on the last chorus or something. It just sort of felt like, here's the twist, credits, in a way that, like, in other songs like this, Romeo and Juliet is not a great example from T. Swift, but Holes in the Floor of Heaven, let's say, or let's not, if you really can't stand Steve What's-His-Nuts.
Warner, yes.
Yes, I get it. That song is weapons grade saccharine that gets me every time that he's like, it's grandma. And I'm like, Jesus. Anyway, this is, like, you know, definitely Malabar bunt nip, this stuff. But it's like a 93, like it's like almost there. But with all of that said, like, the fact that I sort of wrote, like, I'm looking at my notes and it's like half a page of me sort of trying to write it out. Like, what is missing here? What is bugging me? What is this poppy seed at the gum line? Which I would argue is, that's a choice that the song makes. And I don't have to agree with it, but the fact that I was kind of banging my metaphorical head against the outside of that ending and being like, I don't understand why this is like this, means that it's a good, well-crafted, thoughtful song. And it's also deceptively simple seeming. Like, yes, there is a chick, like there's some chickens, there's a front porch, like there's a dog under it, I'm sure, that you know, they wrote about in the follow-up in the sequel to the song. Katie and Tommy's dog. Katie and Tommy's hound, excuse me. And there is like, it seems like this sort of refrigerator poetry kit seeming construction that you're like, okay, yeah, it's twangy and there's the tasty freeze. Like, uh-huh. But it's not that simple at all. Like, all of these things are, in fact, arranged to make poetry, to make a story that has depth. Like, I can picture that porch and the chickens. So, I mean, I didn't really know what I was walking into with this, except that there were gonna be, you know, cocks walking around on the property.
Of all types.
But it was, I mean, it was really a kind of a fun thought experiment to be like, I like this and I'm unsatisfied by that. And, you know, why is that? And what are the reasons why that is that are unique to country music and stuff like that? So, and I don't think I ever heard this song before. I know, I realize that seems impossible, but like, if it was popular in 1991, I would have had no contact with it.
Oh, so. I can't imagine that in 91, a song like this would have made it into the Northeast. Like, oh my God.
Yeah.
No.
No. Because life is a highway, but not yet, and not for you.
New York City famously didn't even have a country music radio station for most of the 90s. So,
yeah.
So I am so struck by all of your analysis here, and I am so pleased by it, because I'm just glad that no matter how you end up feeling about that poppy seed in your gums, that the song engaged you in that way.
Yeah.
Because I really find this song to be very masterful. In less than 4 minutes, it really tells a short story to me.
Yeah.
And I agree with you. I can picture those chickens. I know exactly what it's like when he proposes to her outside of the Tasty Freeze. Oh, another country signifier. Of course, he has to propose with his high school ring because he can't afford a wedding band. Yes, of course he does.
Yeah.
I mean, the fact that he even has a high school ring. Anyway.
Well, and it's probably one of those like gigantic football regional champs things that weighs like a pound and a half, and she could fit two fingers in it, but sure. Go ahead. If that's what's going to let y'all fuck, do what you got to do, Tommy.
So I have to take a brief sidebar. A good friend of mine named Kate McConnell, who was at my wedding, so that means you shared space with her once, but I don't expect you to remember her at all, because, you know, weddings. But Kate is, her parents have been married for ages, but they met in high school, and they went on their first date in high school, and Kate's mother was a very proper woman, young woman, you know, like, she was an A student type, and Tom McConnell drove a motorcycle.
Oh.
Okay, he wore a leather jacket. I think you know exactly what I mean. And she tells a story about being on the porch after their first date, and he kissed her goodnight, and she says, I felt a zing that went all the way to my toes, and I thought, oh no, not Tom McConnell. Which I just love that story, because they're still married after all these decades, and to me, that story is this song in a way. And the moment when Mama says, Katie looks at Tommy like I still look at you. Sarah, just right now, I got chills on my arms. I have such a Pavlovian response to that. I cannot tell you, I'm not even joking, the number of times I have sat or stood or listened to this song, listened to that line, and actual tears have come to my eyes. There's just something about the moment where she is able to guide the husband into realizing that maybe their daughter is on the precipice of the great and enduring love that they have, that I find so powerful. Like, I understand how ridiculous it is, like, but I'm like even getting choked up right now. I just think it's so, it's one of the most emotionally moving moments in any song I've ever heard in my life for me. And I cannot explain why. I truly do not know why. I would have to do like years of analysis on myself to get to that. But there's just something about the, well, actually, we've talked about this before. Country songs are very often the songs where men's emotions become realized, mm-hmm. and emotions that are different than anger, machismo, and horniness. And this song to me is a great example of that. And I have such a soft spot for any story about a southern woman who is able to use her strength and insight to force a man to have feelings. I mean, Steel Magnolias is my text for that very reason. So I have just literally had tears, sometimes even like rolling down my face, because I'll just imagine the whole scene and I'll imagine how everybody in the story feels. And I can just imagine like Mama coming out of course, on the porch, there's a screen door that she comes out of. And
wiping her hands on her apron.
That's right. Even though it's past midnight, she definitely still has an apron on. I don't know why.
Sure. Biscuit flour on her face. Look, it's
And I could just, it's like the fact that Mama's presence isn't in the first part of the song, but it's the most powerful presence. I just feel like that feels right. So to me, the short story effect of this song is so powerful. And Andrew has teased me more than once about how emotional I get, because he's like, this is a solidly constructed song. I'm not going to cry, but okay.
Well, I'm not going to cry either, because here's another thing that, as you've been talking, I realized that I like about this song and am grateful for it doing. This was not my experience as a dating teenager, but the dominance of, fathers in pop culture who are like jokingly or otherwise going to fuck you up for trying to date their female children.
Yes.
Is so boring and gross. And I think that like father-daughter shit is really not that complicated. But certainly in my family, my dad was like, he seems fine. And it's like, we broke up. He's like, I never liked that guy. Like, my dad understood what team he was on, but there wasn't like, he was not the one waiting up for me.
Right.
That was my mom. And he was not going to be like sort of territorial and gross in that way. Like that he's like, does he have a decent handshake? Yes. Are you crying a lot? No. Great. He could stay. Like, right. But that in this song, it's like, this is sort of the basis of the conflict makes your story. And that's the basis of the story. But that the mom comes in and is like, just a reminder, you're trying to squelch everything that makes our family. Like everything that created our family is what you are now trying to squelch in the next generation. And the song successfully communicates, like, I can picture this dad and I can picture him looking crestfallen and being like, well, shit.
Yes.
Because the unspoken, and you better get your shit correct or I'll stop looking at you like that. Like, bonehead, caveman, unfrozen caveman dad. Like, and you can tell that he was like, oh. And then, yes. Like, he wasn't happy about it. And, it, Tommy, like, he's always like rolling his eyes during Sunday brunch and getting kicked under the table. Like, he's not perfect, but he heard his wife. He heard what was important there and he tried to get himself correct. So I guess the song really does have an ending that I just wrote. And that's like The poppy seed has now come loose for me. Thank you, Mark, Trisha, LLC. That it's like there. What happens after this is like, it sort of bugs me that it's unknown. But in the end, once I talk about it, it is known. And that's really quite something that like the song sort of has other verses that it just lets you write for yourself, because the song has done all the work it needs to do. And it's like, oh, okay, 3.5 minutes. Bye. let us know what you come up with for, you know, kid names for Tommy and Katie.
Yes. And so. it is a very rare song that leaves chapters 8 through 12 for you to write, but makes mm-hmm. it so easy for you to write them.
Yeah. And I sort of was like, well, and also, like, you sort of get to the end of the song and it's like, so, okay, is Tommy just like standing out on the sidewalk, like waiting to get yelled at? Did he run off? That's what I'd do. It's like, it's a half hour past her curfew. Like, if his wife asked for a word, do the smart thing, tuck and roll out of there.
So I get back in your mud covered truck and drive your ass away.
I do have a, like, leave the headlights off. It's better. He can't get a clear shot off that way. I do have a couple of lingering questions, but I mean, it's a fun conversation. It's a fun journey to go on. That it's like, and then Tommy wrapped his ancient truck around a pole. Like, who knows? We should write the rest of the album just about them.
Well, and this is also a moment, honestly, a rare moment when all of this country bullshit actually works.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, the signifiers and all of the cliches, they actually somehow get spun into gold here. And I am astonished that John Imes, who wrote this song, is not even well known enough to have his own Wikipedia page. And I don't even know if Imes is how you say his last name. It might be Imes for all the fuck I know. Like, how did someone show up, write this, and then recede into the background again? I don't
like
know.
Homer in the Hedge. Yeah.
Well, damn, I feel like we have now just completed some sort of BA in the literature of country music.
Agree. Let me ask you this before we wrap it up. Did you think I was going to have a Martika reaction to this? Like, where did you see this going for me when you picked the song? I feel like the repeated warnings about the capital K were like, okay, just, you know, you have to accept things for what they are. And I was like, Jesus Christ, just, you know, pick the song or don't. It's fine.
I just felt like I thought that the structure of the song would be interesting to you, but I was concerned that the sound of the song might be a barrier. This is clear by my behavior before we recorded this episode. But I had faith. You know, I think that we've both demonstrated at this point that we're willing to really dig in, even if something isn't for us. So I suspected that you would find there would be things to talk about.
Yeah. And yeah, it was an enjoyable song. Like, I think it is very stealthily complex and smart and good. And it's not unenjoyable to listen to either. And just a reminder, I dragged Tim McGraw into these hallowed precincts once upon a time.
I got friends that do.
Oh my God. I'm lucky to have a friend that's you after that shit. And that was like episode 50. So we could survive. We can survive some capital K. It's going to be okay.
I actually just had a sense memory of preparing for that episode and standing in the kitchen. Oh, we have a stool in our kitchen that I was sitting on. And I was reading the lyrics of that song to Andrew while he was cooking. And we were both just howling.
I mean, and now it's over. We never have to talk about that song again.
Well, you know what? I'll tell you what. I'm going to hop in my beat up Chevy truck and I'm going to drive on down to your house. And if you can get the chickens out of the way, you can hop on in and we'll go have some fun.
Are we going to the Tasty Freeze? Because it's a perfect day for some soft serve in New York City right now.
Hell yeah, we are.
All right.
One day shy of 8 years old, when Grandma passed away, I was a broken-hearted little boy blowing out that birthday cake.
Mark and Sarah Talk About Songs is hosted by Mark Blankenship, that's me, and Sarah D. Bunting.
That's me. I also edit the podcast, which is a proud member of the Bleav Network, Learn more at BLEAV.com.
To learn more about us, submit song requests, get a pop chart reading, or buy a Mastis book, visit our website at markandsarahtalkaboutsongs.com. You'll also find all of our social media links there, too.
That's Mark and Sarah, with an H, talkaboutsongs.com. And for even more content and access the Mastass Happy Hour, become a Patreon supporter at patreon.com/mastass.
Thanks for listening.
Sometimes if you're lonely, just remember she can see. There's holes in the floor of heaven and she's watching over you. Mark and Sarah talk about songs. Mark and Sarah talk about songs. Mark and Sarah talk about songs.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.